Chair, you are on the record.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority's Thursday, July 27th board meeting. Randy, would you call the board members?
Ms. McKinnon?
Here.
Mr. Kendi?
Here.
Mr. Fogel?
Here.
Mr. Vivlamar?
Here.
Commissioner Sandy?
Here.
Chair Cruz?
We're here.
On our panel.
Before us is item number 3 and proposed agenda to tender approval. Take a motion. Is there any changes or questions, deletions?
I move we approve the agenda as presented.
This is Albert. I'll second.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Albert. Any objections to approving the agenda as presented? Hearing and seeing none, the minister approved. Bring this item number 5, public comments. I remind the public to please limit your comments to 2 minutes. It will be for a maximum 1 hour of the day if need be. Please state your name and affiliation to Gamble and Clarity for the record. And if you have questions, we'll try to get those questions. This is a comment period, not a question answer, which I'll direct staff to, if you have an address or an email, to get the questions answered for you. That being said, and is there anybody in the boardroom wishing to make a public comment?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Is there? I'd like to assist, sir.
Right there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Paul Boos, and I was previously chairman of the board when I worked for Wally Dickel when I was Commissioner of Commerce for that time. And congratulations to you. I'll come by and see you sometime. So I'm just representing myself today, and I'm speaking in favor of your resolution on the issue of bank discrimination against oil and gas development in the Arctic. And so this is happening all over the Arctic. It's not just affecting us. So this has been a subject of the Arctic Economic Council as well, that I serve on a couple of their working groups, the 8 businesses of the 8 Arctic nations. And so I sent some materials to you, and I just want to tell you what they are. One of them, they just recently released a really comprehensive evaluation of the specific forms, the banks, and the specific forms of discrimination that they're practicing across the Arctic. So that could be useful to you. I sent that on. Also, their previous statement against the bank discrimination. And they're working at a new one now, too. And probably because it's getting worse. More and more banks are signing on. This amounts to is woke advertising, or advertising to the woke. It's not going to mean one drop less oil being burned. It just means it's going to be produced somewhere else. So it's completely ineffective, but it's just a marketing ploy that they're on and of course it's rank discrimination. So, some of the points that we're making to the Arctic Economic Council that you might consider as you move forward with this is, most importantly, it won't make one drop less of oil being burned. It's completely ineffective. Complete window dressing. The other is the impact on consumers. And in Europe, they've seen a 1,000% increase in our price of fuel. In the United States, the same here. Restrictions on oil and gas development are driving inflation here. And we're currently importing 840,000 barrels a day of oil from Russia to the United States. That's almost twice of our oil pipeline from here is the impact of this. So, in comparison, we're supposed to be saving the world for climate change. Well, what have we done in Alaska through the investments of the Energy Authority? We're about 30% renewable energy here. In many other Arctic states, it's 100% Iceland, 98% Norway. We're way ahead. The U.S. is 9%. European Union is 13%. So, I did, include some of those in an additional statement that I made in terms of sustainable development for the Arctic, where we look at this as the whole picture. We're not the problem. We're the solution to the problem. We're also providing minerals for electric cars. We're producing alternative energy. We're looking at producing hydrogen in the Aleutian Islands. So I would also like to say that beyond it being just wrong to discriminate, it's probably also illegal. Now, you got one of the best legal minds in the state working for you. That's Mark Davis. So you might want to ask him to take a look at it. He used to be a forensic auditor. And take a look and see if this. I sent also to you something that I had written up, which is a draft request for the Treasury Department to look into this. This is classic redlining. This is where you do geographic discrimination based on the geography of where you are, no other conditions. And given the preponderance of our native populations on the North Slope, I think you could even say that it's racial profiling and racial redlining. So you might want to take a look at that. I'm not a lawyer, and I didn't sleep at a Motel 6 last night, but it might, if somebody that's a lot smarter than me could look at this. The other thing is, Commissioner Sandy, you have the Banking and Securities Commission under there, and you charter these banks. And is there, do we require the banks that have charters in Alaska to not discriminate? So I think we need to take a look at all of these and put our best foot forward. I'll continue to communicate with you on what the Arctic Economic Council is doing so you can see, you know, in a coalition with the other Arctic states, we can take this on with some allies. Over.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. I would encourage Alan and maybe Morgan that we stay in touch with Mr. Hughes and you know, a lot of institutional knowledge and pass back and forth information. Very valuable. Thank you. Thanks for your comments.
Yeah. Read your report. Looking good.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. For trying. Is anybody else in the boardroom? All right. Any online?
Yes. If there are any members on the line that wish to make a public comment, please press *9 on your phone now. Please clearly state your name and affiliation if you have one. Hello?
Hello. Thank you to the Ada Board for this opportunity to testify. My name is Lois Epstein, and I am an Alaska licensed engineer and the president of L&E Engineering Policy, a technical and policy research consulting firm. I have brief comments on 5 Ada issues. 1. Regarding the Ambler Access Project and Resolution Number G2203, the board memo says that the $15.4 million the resolution includes will be matched by another $15.4 million from Ambler Metals. This is not entirely correct, since Resolution Number G2103 makes clear that the matching money will be credited back in future project user fees. This should be made clear in the memo and in public discussion of match funds. 2. Exhibit A of Resolution Number G2205, the investment policy update, consists of numerous organizations, however, only a very small number of these entities issue securities. The investment policy provision that mentions Exhibit A prohibits ADA from buying securities from restricted companies. Exhibit A should include only those companies that issue securities. Otherwise, ADA looks like it is creating a list of companies and nonprofits that it applies for no good reason, which is very unprofessional. 3. In its December board meeting discussion on why ADA would not provide a full 50% dividend to the state's general fund in 2021, page 6 of the board meeting minutes appears to have missed 2 mentions of the words, quote, upwards of, unquote, in the minutes. Mr. Weissner stated that upwards of $150 million will need to be contributed to the Ample project, not approximately $150 million as stated in the minutes, and that there will be upwards of $25 to $50 million in new projects each year. Please correct the minutes. 4. Please provide specific details about which Ambler Access and Mustang topics will be covered in today's executive session and why confidentiality about those topics is necessary. I am concerned that the state's Open Meetings Act Section 44.62.310B otherwise may be violated. This provision states that, quote, the motion to convene an executive session must clearly and with specificity describe the subject of the proposed executive session without defeating the purpose of addressing the subject in private. Subjects may not be considered at the executive session except those mentioned in the motion calling for the executive session unless auxiliary to the main question, unquote. Five, last, it is disrespectful of the public's time to continually change meeting start times. Please set a meeting start time and stick with it. Today's start time was changed from 11 to 11:30 to 12 to 12:30. And Mr. Bruce announced at the end of the AEA meeting that the AEDA meeting would start at 12:15, which did not happen. My clients and I would greatly appreciate AEDA addressing these five topics. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Happy 2022, AEDA Board. I'm Rick Whitbeck, Alaska State Director for Power in the Future. You know, this is a small but powerful nonprofit advocating for continued jobs and generationally changing responsible development of Alaska's God-given abundance. Great to be online with you this morning. Appreciate all you're doing with your mission, and we appreciate all the efforts. We've already heard more gnashing of teeth from my friends with the eco-left decrying your actions to grow Alaska's economy while being fully incongruent with their hopelessly misguided attempts to lock up Alaska and turn it into 400-plus million acres of national parkland. They don't like development, don't like you, don't like jobs, don't like their PFD. Oh, wait a minute. They like that. They just thought they don't appreciate where it comes from. They've also perpetuated the complete and utter lie that Anwar's coastal plain shouldn't be developed. Keep up with your lawsuit against President Biden and his leadership team. Which brings me to the last couple things to talk with you about. Roads and financial institutions. Kudos to you for your continued efforts with the Anvil Road Project. Don't let the minority voice dissuade you. You're in the right, AEDA, and rational Alaskans support you. The proposed West Pacific Access Road is going to be a valuable tool for Alaska's job creation. The Whistler, Island Mountain, Estelle, and Canyon Creek Project will all be accessible from the proposed access. Do what you do best, AEDA. Make decisions to grow Alaska. Oh, and this discussion on divesting from the financial institutions who have doubled the Kool-Aid of environmental extremism, that can't happen soon enough. We don't need to be enriching banks who have no heart for investing in communist China, but won't support projects in Alaska with our highest levels of environmental stewardship. Again, thank you for your support of Alaska and Alaskan jobs. For my friends on the line, protesting your actions while using phones, computers, heat sources and clothing made from petroleum and mine products, the men and women who helped create them would point out your hypocrisy towards your fight against their chosen careers. Hey, the board, one more time, thanks for your effort. And I know you're all saying it internally. Rick, you're cracking welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Randy?
Hello? Hello, are you on the public line?
Yes. Jay Hermanson, County Engineering. Yes, Jay Hermanson, General Manager of Kunin Engineering, a certified minority business enterprise. Kunin would like to very much thank the AEDA board and staff for the use of small businesses and minority-owned businesses like Kunin Engineering. In your procurement plans, we believe it's good policy, and it also promotes economic development in Alaska through a force multiplying basis by using Alaska-owned businesses to perform your various work. So we'd like to commend you for these actions, and look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Hello? You are on the public line.
Good morning, John.
I'm sorry, could you repeat, please?
Good morning, this is John Gagey.
Thank you.
This is John Gagey calling from Fairbanks, representing myself, my family business, which is Indica Garage in the Brooks Range, about 50 miles west of Bethel. I've been reading the Subsistence Advisory Committee has been established for the Amber Road. my comments are with respect to G22-03, upcoming summer's worth of work. And there's been this disturbing reports that there was refusal to include federally recognized tribes in some of these recent meetings. And I don't know all the facts on this because, again, it's difficult to get information from ADA on these processes. I know that in the last and only time ADA organized an all-corridor, all-tribe meeting in Fairbanks, the headline in the news line of the next day was Amber Road crashes at hearing. And so I would just encourage more outreach, especially all-corridor, all-tribe. We're 9 years in now from your proposal, and your meetings appear to be less inclusive and increasingly hidden behind executive privilege. As a stakeholder in the area, as I said about, from the road proposal approximately 5 to 10 miles away, I want to point out that the optics of this project are not good. Those of us with businesses in the areas, we are developers. We have a stake in Alaska, and then, of course, there are those that live in the villages nearby. Currently, there's lawsuits against the rush permitting process. And additionally, I found out the other day that there's a lease proposal in battles with DOT for man camp of undetermined size. These things are just very vague, and they keep coming up. I'm not sure if there are any original board members left from your early days in battles around 2013, but the outreach in battles in Evansville has been a disaster. The original right-of-way proposal would have cut Bettles and Evansville off from their own flow pond. The villagers worked hard to communicate that they wanted no part of the road. Eventually, the proposed route has been moved 10 miles north of Kayakup. But now one of the subcontractors lost their man camp in the middle of town. So it appears that without any kind of oversight on spending and proposing overrunning and silencing, it's causing more issues and confusion for people in the area that we seem to know nothing about. And again, as a developer in the area, I support development, but I do not support bad development and misappropriation of funds. So I strongly urge you to include a larger degree of oversight, accountability, and fiscal responsibility. I don't understand. It looks like in the agenda there is $660,000 for stakeholder outreach this summer. I just don't see in your past record how that's going to be actively used in the area to promote true outreach. As I said, the last all-corridor meeting was in 2013. So, and it also looks from the budget that you're proposing to spend another $7 million before April. And it's just hard to understand how these numbers are happening so quickly with so little oversight. So I'd appreciate more communication and more outreach. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anna?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Board Member McKinnon here. I was wondering if I could ask our Executive Director to talk about stakeholder engagement and a meeting that was just referred to in the last testimony, if it would be appropriate.
Go ahead.
Through the Chair, Board Member McKinnon, what I'd like to highlight, and I believe that there's going to be a press release that's being issued today that's trying to give some clarity to that particular point, is that a subsistence advisory committee was established by Native elders, representatives of the villages that are impacted along the Ambler Access Route. That they had their first meeting on January 11th of this year. And that was from a working group that was established with chairman being identified by Governor Dunleavy. And that was Larry Westlake and Fred Byfield being representatives from Nana Regional Villages and Doyon Regional Villages. And through that working group process, what was established was a subsistence advisory committee with representation defined by the Native communities impacted, the villages impacted along the route. So of the additional members, all members within the subsistence advisory committee are elders living in the communities that are impacted to provide ultimately the input to us on design issues, critical elements that we need to understand on the impact on subsistence to those communities. ADA is a sponsor for the establishment of the Subsistence Advisory Committee in full compliance with the record of decision that was achieved with the BLM and the National Park Service. It is a committee that is run by those elders, and it's really an element that ADA is an invited party to participate because we ultimately need to get feedback from that committee group itself, but is really run by the elders from those villages. And I really do ask in that case that the process is respected from that position because it really is important and critical information that we're looking to achieve.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Right, and I will remind people on the comments, please limit to 2 minutes, please. 2 minutes. Rainey, go ahead.
Thank you.
Coming up long line.
Five more. You're on the public line. Hello. Hello, you're on the public line.
Good afternoon, Chair Cruz and members of the ADA Board. My name is Kari Moore, and I'm the Project Manager for the Resource Development Council for Alaska, commonly referred to as RDC. It's one of RDC's priorities to encourage responsible development of Alaska's natural resources and to encourage new exploration and projects. RDC strongly believes resource development projects in Alaska can be done responsibly, with a key focus on protecting the environment, including cultural activities and wildlife, while providing well-paying jobs, many of which require training and offer a lifetime of opportunity, and improving a long-term economic future for Alaska. I only have brief comments today with regard to the ADA Board considering a budget authorization to enable the 2022-2023 Amber Access Project field season. This effort builds on the initial preliminary project engineering scope by providing additional field data on cultural attributes, fish passages, hydrology, geotechnical, and engineering. It also enhances stakeholder outreach, communications, and workforce development throughout the villages along the corridor. I acknowledge that there are special interests that oppose further development of mining materials in Alaska and elsewhere. However, mineral development in Alaska could ultimately prove indispensable as forecasts continue to indicate our nation's mineral demands will increase. The demands will continue to be satisfied often through the use of imported minerals, when instead the resources should be developed and produced here in Alaska where operators are strictly regulated and best management activities are employed to avoid and minimize impact. Thank you for the opportunity to support access to the Ambler Mining District.
Thank you for your comments.
As a reminder, if there are any members on the line that wish to make a public comment, please press star 9 on your phone now. Please clearly state your name and affiliation if you have one.
Hello, my name is Joshua Knightley. I'm a Fairbanks resident. I am representing myself, and I have two comments. First is about the Angler Subsistence Advisory Committee and the apparent lack of tribal representation. I know one of the committee members just mentioned that this is something that is set up with the tribes and everyone's running it, but I will believe that when I hear it from them. Because from what I've heard from them, IDEA has basically set up a committee where they put a bunch of yes men on it that don't represent tribal governments. My second comment is about the investment policy. Looking at page 12 as that appendix of the investment policy, it seems that IDEA is very blatantly deciding that oil and gas is the only way to develop industry up here in Alaska, which is just not true. There are so many other ways for us to do that. So I implore y'all to get rid of that policy. Stop excluding people that don't want to develop oil and gas, especially since many of those groups that are being excluded are based here in Alaska. And that is a purposeful exclusion of Alaskan voices. Thanks for your time, and hope you all have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Amy?
Good afternoon. My name is Tammy Wilson. I sit on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. I'm not talking for the Assembly, but as an Assembly member. I just want to say thank you for resolution number G22-02, taking a little deeper dive into what we could be doing here to help military housing and the military zone that is actually the same thing as the city of North Pole. And I look forward to following along to see how we could be better partners with the military and with you as well. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Thank you.
Hello, you are on the phone. Good afternoon.
Yes, I'm getting various voices. This is Ken Casper from Homer. I wanted to speak to Resolution G2205. There's a bunch of different things that bother me about this resolution. The first is if you're going to start establishing screens for investment funds that you would use or have invest your money, the screens could be very, very varied, and I could think of a lot of them that would affect Alaska more than just economic sanctions levied against those that don't agree with the screen. The element of economic sanctions is something that I find pretty distasteful. It's not something that you commonly see in state government. And in this case, the list that you've comprised is almost an enemies list. There are very few people on that list that actually offer the services that you're going to deny them from participating in. It's just like, we don't like these people, we don't like these people. And I find that to be really untoward. So I'm not sure exactly if this is being driven by an overarching state policy that the governor has asked you to take on. I think that this is going to attract a lot of attention, especially given the wide variety of domestic corporations that you're attacking. So I would hope that that you debate it and that you debate it in public. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
Hi, my name is Mari Toller. I am calling from Eagle River, Alaska, speaking for myself. I want to echo a comment that was made previously about the Subsistence Advisory Committee not being represented by or appointed by the communities themselves, but rather being picked from an outside entity. Also, the executive session I'd like to ask about. I do appreciate the efforts on that with the notification feature now to notify people when you come back from executive sessions. I would also like to ask if there is any sort of, is it recorded in any way? Is there any way to avoid discussions in executive sessions or to check to make sure that what is being discussed in an executive session is in fact potentially harmful for the public to hear, or is checks and balances, I guess, is there any way to make sure to ease the public mindset that we are getting all the information that's necessary and suited for public disclosure? I do want to make a comment about someone had said earlier that there's not going to be a reduction in the need for fossil fuels, and I think that's really misleading considering there are plenty of projects, renewable energies that are bringing down the need, that will bring down the need, that is necessary to bring down the need for fossil fuels, that it has opportunity and availability. Sorry, I'm losing my words. You have the opportunity to invest in those kinds of projects. And also the investment policy, I would like to echo what was said before, that it seems exclusionary to Alaskans and prejudice, especially when you look at it from a more local and community-led perspective. The people who are being affected by these AMLR projects, by oil and gas AMLR, are the communities that are most vulnerable, really do need to have more of a voice and I guess we heard more. I get more outrage, like a previous commenter said. Apologize, I don't remember any of the names, but yes, thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, and if you would send your name and contact information in on the website, some of those questions could be answered for you, if you asked it. Next, thank you for your comments. Next.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Sean Busby, and I live in Wiseman, Alaska, for the Brooks Range. Ada is a public company and accountable to Alaskans, and I'm concerned of the recent gaslighting of TCC, other tribes and communities, as well as the many subsistence users to the region. The Subsistence Advisory Council that you sponsor seems deeply flawed and loaded with bias towards developing this road despite actually listening to the vast majority of residents and tribes that will be impacted. In addition to the enormous cost, there has been the burden of all of us local residents as well as all Alaskans will have that will cloud over us with the potential for toxic spills or releases into the delicate ecosystem and changing migration patterns to the food source we depend on. I believe you should be accountable to providing us all with a non-biased assistance committee that reflects all in the regions that this impacts. If you want to show good faith to citizens of Alaska and, more importantly, the local residents that depend on subsistence, then there should be no gaslighting and more seats should be added to the Subsistence Advisory Committee that reflects all that will be impacted. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments.
Is it my turn to speak?
It is.
Hello, this is Eva Burke. I am from Yana in Miami Hot Springs. My family originated from the Cobuk Valley, and I work pretty closely with our hunting and fishing gathering task force at Canada Chiefs Conference. So my comments today are pretty specific to the Subsistence Advisory Committee Working Group, which I feel was formed in a hasty effort to obtain the federal wetland permit from the Army Corps of Engineers. I think holding scoping meetings for tribes in an urban area during hunting season was not appropriate tribal consultation, and that's not considered a real subsistence evaluation. And I do feel that the members of this group, some of them, may lack the knowledge and experience to provide a sufficient subsistence evaluation, as mandated by Title 8 of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act. Furthermore, only two of these members currently serve on the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Advisory Committee's ACs for their local AC. A third member may still be serving on their local AC, but that is not reflected on the state's website. With a seven-member committee, that puts the voices of true subsistence advocates in the minority. Furthermore, having representatives from Alaska Native corporations serve on this committee is a potential conflict of interest, as there may be future financial gains for these corporations that are not publicly disclosed at this time. Black Native corporations are not tribes. They are not tribes. They are not sovereign nations. So oftentimes they are in disagreement with the tribes that are in their respective regions about the resource development projects that have potential to come about, especially projects, extreme extraction in pristine, sensitive ecosystems that are already under immense pressure from climate change, existing land management planning processes, and fish and wildlife regulatory structures. Furthermore, these lands are public. The public is supposed to have a chance to support or propose projects. $15 million could go a long way in determining the feasibility of Alaska entering into more sustainable development projects. Alaskans should be able to protect their most sensitive areas from unnecessary development. There are other options and opportunities. I'm an engineer. I used to work in permitting, did business development. I know there are other opportunities that are feasible and that we could put dollars towards them to investigate them. And we need to be investing in our people. We need to be investing in our Alaskans. Oftentimes, opening up these big resource development gives short-time jobs to people that aren't Alaskans. So I know there's no real way for this comment to really affect decision-making. I'm glad to have this opportunity to speak today and share my concerns, but we really need to think about how the public is really, their comments are really being scored in the scoping process. So I just want to thank you and have a good day.
Thank you for your comments. All right. So So everyone else is online. I will close the public comment section, and we're going to go to prior minutes for December 1st, 2021.
Mr. Chairman, I motion that we approve the meeting minutes from approve this meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I'll object.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to ask if our executive director had any comments on the public testimony in regards to needing to update the minutes. It was from Lois Epstein, I believe, was suggesting that upwards of, is there anything that needs corrected? I was trying to locate it in the meeting minutes. I heard those comments, and was not sure if it was this particular meeting minutes that are in front of us.
So Anna, don't we need to put it on the floor first before you object?
We didn't have a second yet.
Well, I can second and object.
There you go.
Mr. Chairman, Board Member McKinnon, I'll second so that it's on the table and object so that I can speak.
Thank you.
If we could get a comment from our executive director. I just wanted to make sure the wording was accurate.
Chair, Board Member McKinnon, I do not recall specifically whether I used the words on average. I think it was in the minutes versus up to 159. I think in this case, probably both are applicable. We don't have a definitive number that's on it. We do have a budget in anticipation of the level of capital that's necessary to support a private funding capital raise for the Ambler Access Project, which is the specific reference on that one.
I would also make the comment that it's a challenge even with under current economic conditions with inflation and supply chain issues, what ultimately that number is going to be.
Mr. Chair, I think that's absolutely correct because our numbers at this point were based upon 2020 dollars on the initial budgeting and in some cases as early as 2018, and there have been inflationary pressures on the full cost.
All right. Any further clarifications or questions on the minutes? Hearing none. Any objections to adopting the minutes as provided? Minutes are adopted. Brings us to new business. Item A under new business, G22-01, Ada FY23 operating budget submission ratifications. Alan?
Mr. Chair, before the board is resolution number G2201, which is resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority ratifying the governor's submission of the fiscal 23 operating budget by ADA. That budget is attached. This is what was included in the governor's operating budget submission. And ADA, as staff in this case, is recommending to the board full approval of that budget.
Thank you, Alan. Albert, do you have any comments?
I do not have any comments, Mr. Chairman. We've reviewed the budget and are satisfactory. We are basically, for operations, holding the line on expenses.
All right, and I'll remind for the record that ADA's budget is self-sustaining, that there's no GF general fund dollars. This is all internal dollars. We're not asking the state for any money. Is that correct, Alan?
Mr. Chair, that's absolutely correct. So our funding is managed by ourselves directly from the returns that we receive on the projects and our investments. And since the initiation of the dividend statute in 1995, we have reported positive net income and able to sustain that the operations of the organization.
Thank you. Anybody willing to make a motion?
Resolution number G2201, ADA Fiscal 23 Operating Budget Submission Ratification.
Board Member Givenwater, this is Albert.
Bill was first, so you seconded it, right, Bill?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Randy, would you pull the board?
Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Koenig?
Yes.
Mr. Fogel?
Yes.
Mr. Beavermore?
Yes.
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. That brings us under new business item B, presentation to the gas utility. I'll make the comment. I've been waiting for this. See what that we have. Mr. Dan Britton, general manager, graciously came down from Fairbanks to give us his annual report on the utility up there and where they're going. Dan, welcome.
I think I'm settled in here now. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and other board members. It's a great pleasure to be here with you today and give you an update of where the Interior Gas Utility is at. What I'll do today is just kind of look back into 2021, some of our successes and things that we accomplished, touch base on the things we're focused on in 2022, and answer any questions that you might have on things I missed covering. So it's take a look back into 2021. We feel like it was a successful year for the Interior Gas Utility. It started off with a very important part of everything we do, which is a natural gas contract to supply our liquefaction facility. It's located in Point McKenzie. That contract was executed with Hillcorp. It was resulted in a slight price reduction from the contract that we had with Hillcorp at the time. It's a 5-year base contract with 2 3-year one-way options. Those options are at the IGU's sole discretion. So it provides price security and gas availability through that entire 11-year time frame. It has an option in it that allows us to expand our daily volume take, which would provide for an expansion of the liquefaction facility if we choose to do so. So we can increase our daily maximum.
That would be the Point McKenzie?
That's the Point McKenzie liquefaction facility. It's, we can go from 5 million cubic feet a day, which is in the base contract, up to an additional 10 million. So that would allow for another 100,000 gallons per day of liquefaction production. The price is stable over that time frame with a small 1% escalator index. So we're very pleased with the contract and the flexibilities and security that it supplies, particularly the ability to increase when an expansion is brought forward. Secondly, we, in February, for the first time in history, introduced natural gas to the distribution system in North Pole. We had constructed a storage facility in North Pole that was put online in February. We gasified about 70 miles of distribution system that had been previously installed in 2015 and now have customers burning gas in North Pole. We received a couple national awards, one for safety from the American Public Gas Association and the other for a marketing effort that we had done related to the ribbon cutting of the North Pole facility, a video that we had put forward. So we were quite pleased with those efforts, particularly when we're in high construction activities, and to be able to maintain strong safety records is important to us. In 2021, is during our construction season, which was physically between June and the end and September.
So Dan, yep. For our board members online, I know some pages
aren't numbered.
Numbers. So
yeah.
What is the 2021 look back?
2021 look back. We are now on the page title at the top, title New Services, or with the first bullet, New Services. Yeah, sorry about that. I'll make sure I number them next time.
All right.
In 2021, during our construction season, we installed 311 new services and approximately 6 miles of additional mainline.
So percentage-wise, Dan, what 311, what percentage over the existing?
That's about, we had about 1,600 customers prior to the start of the year, so it's about 15% addition. The financial pro forma, we have a 20-year, 30-year financial performa capital plan had a 347 in 2021. Between 2020 and 2021, we're slightly ahead of the pro forma right now. 2022 calls for 600. So every application that was received was successfully installed during our short construction season. The additional 6 miles was based on the interest that was received from customers on areas that didn't have gas main to them at the time. So we'll see incremental gas main installation as along with new services. One of the things we're hearing from customers, and given natural gas is relatively new to a broader spectrum in Fairbanks, is an availability of contractors. Who should customers contact to install their boilers or convert their appliances? And so we put together a preferred contractor program and reached out to the mechanical contractors in Fairbanks and gave our customers essentially a one-stop shop or where they should look when they are getting pricing and availability to do their conversions. And so that's been well received by customers, and it simplifies things for them. We moved to a new building in August, the end of August, and we were in our previous building for over 20 years. So for those who have ever moved, you know what a challenge that is, and especially for a business operation during a heavy construction season. So it was a success that we were able to get that done and get both our administration and our operating staff in the same facility. It's on the corner of Phillips Field Road and Pegger Road, so if you're ever in town, stop in for a coffee.
What was there before you moved in there?
Originally it was A&W Wholesale, and then it was a food service supply company. And so it's about a 20,000 square foot building, so it's significantly larger than the space we were in, allows for our growth that we will see. And we were able to do it without affecting our budget. Essentially our cost of the building ownership is equal to what the lease costs were previously. So what's in store for us in 2022? Some of you may be familiar that the Interior Gas Utility partnered with the Fairbanks North Star Borough, the Matsu Borough, and the Alaska Railroad on proposing a project under the Build Back Better grant. It was a two-phase grant application. Unfortunately, our project was not selected. But what the effort did do, though, is to continue to bring awareness of the importance of our project and the potential for not just economic development in the Fairbanks area, but also throughout the state, through potential additional customer for the railroad in the future. Our liquefaction facility is in Fort McKenzie and Wasilla. Our growth results in increased gas development in the Cook Inlet as we purchase all of our gas from the Cook Inlet as well. So it was a worthwhile effort, and we'll continue to look for opportunities such as that. There's in the Fairbanks North Star Borough in 2019, they established an oil-to-gas conversion program, which provides funding to customers to assist with the conversion costs. This is an important piece of our effort. Just without new customers, it's a challenge to meet the goals of the project. So initially, it was funded with $1 million. That first $1 million of funding was extended in the first year, so it was a big success. The borough applied an additional $1 million from their ARPA funds, and we have a current application with under the Clean Air Act, the targeted airship grants for an additional $3.2 million that would go towards that program. And so if we receive that, it allows for a substantial benefit to customers. They can receive up to $7,500 towards their conversion from oil to gas. In 2022, as I said, we plan to double the amount of services we did in 2021 and are looking to connect approximately 600. We have 50 in the hopper today that we call approved for construction. That means that it's made it through our process. We have gas available. The customers paid their fees, and they're ready for hookup as soon as we can begin construction. And we have about another 100 that's in review process so far. So we're ahead of where we were last year, and we're hopeful we'll meet our targets. This is just more detail towards how we look at our customer requests. So since we started keeping track in 2021, we had a total request of 654. We installed 311 of them. In 2022, 41 are approved for construction. We had 70 that were canceled, usually by a customer. They changed their mind or they decided they weren't quite ready. And 145 is we don't have a mainline available, and it's not feasible today. So we'll keep that list of customers in our records. And as we look for areas for expansion, where should we move our add gas piping next, we look for the highest concentration of interested customers. So we have a remaining 87 that are in our hopper, and if you see, we'll likely about 14 will probably not go through, and the remaining we expect likely will become customers in 2022, especially once the additional funding in the borough program is finalized. Just kind of interesting details of our applicant profile. 40% of this that we received don't have gas immediately available. That speaks to our need to continue our expansion efforts over time. So continue to put more gas main in the ground as we can make it economically feasible. 80% are residential. The other 20% are commercial. Now that we have gas available in North Pole, 40% of our applicants are in North Pole. The other 60% are in Fairbanks. Ultimately, 60% of them are approved for construction and installed. For those not in the room, the slide I'm on now is the one that's hard to read. That is a comparison of our 2022 projected, fiscal year 2022 projected financials to the pro forma. I thought this was kind of an important slide to share with the Ada board to give you an idea of where we are as it relates to the pro forma. The pro forma is what we utilize to for our financial planning and as we go to bonding, et cetera, to raise additional funds. So we're slightly behind the pro forma as it relates to sales and revenues. One of the things we've noticed is there's a lag in the conversions that wasn't being picked up in the financial models. So when you add a customer, they don't turn on the gas that day. It's usually about a six-month delay between the time that we put the service in and the time that we can see the customer burning gas. You know, they have to do the conversion in their home. They have to complete the construction, whatever activities they have ongoing. That wasn't being picked up in the model. So that's one of the reasons for the gas sales being below what was forecasted. We are managing that through a couple of things. One is our rates slightly higher in our budget versus the pro forma, so that makes sure that we maintain the earnings that are necessary to support our debt coverage. We are requiring a new customer to sign a six-month conversion agreement. So the last thing we want to do is invest in the installation of the piping because we subsidize the costs for a new service line. So if we install one, they have to convert within 6 months or they're responsible for the full cost of that installation. So generally people will convert within the next 6 months. The bottom line, there you can see our operating margins are slightly below, are above what the pro forma indicated, even with reduced sales. So as far as our financial metrics in the bond market, they're slightly better than what the pro forma had shown. Just some of our current bonding status, we did raise about $10 million of project funds in the end of 2019. To date, we've expended about $3 million of those funds. We used about $1.2 million on service line installations, just under $1 million on the main line installations of 6 miles. We've got another $770,000 in the pipes, meters, and parts that we've ordered and that will get installed and then associated with the service line costs. We have about $7 million of those funds remaining for our that will be utilized in our 2022 and 2023 construction efforts. Lastly, always a reminder, remind Dana to make sure he's calling before he digs for a natural gas locate for the protection of our systems. I mislocated. Yeah. I actually don't have one specific to Dana, but I lumped them into the general category of contractors. But And if you need to reach us, our new address is 2525 Phillips Field, and you can email us or call. Everybody here knows how to find me, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for the presentation, Jan. And just for a quick comment for the board members, congratulations on your performance.
Thank you.
That's good. Questions from the board? So a couple questions I have for you, and one is, where are you at in the BTU price between oil and natural gas now?
Good question. Oil is about 31% higher than natural gas today.
31%.
Yeah. Our last survey, net oil prices were about $3.67 per gallon on average through the distributors in Fairbanks. Our equivalent price is $2.80 per gallon. So for the same energy content, when oil is $2.80, it's the same cost as ours. Our gas price to a residential customer is about $20. Approximately $20 per 1,000 cubic foot. And so our customers are saving a substantial amount in comparison to oil. Additionally to that, many people now, when they're converting, are going to a higher efficiency appliance. Natural gas appliances generally have a higher efficiency availability, so they can, rather than an 85-87% efficient oil boiler, they can choose a 95% plus condensing natural gas boiler, so they will have a 10% savings just on that efficiency change, plus the reduction in the cost of the fuel.
Are you seeing folks convert not only their furnaces, but their stoves and hot water heaters and whatnot to gas?
Generally, there's a lot of drivers to convert to gas other than just the price and convenience, availability of stoves. Many people prefer to. I'll jump into those. Yes, we are. A short answer to your question, particularly hot water heaters. Electric hot water heaters about double the cost of a natural gas hot water heater as far as the cost to produce hot water. So people that do the conversion generally in Fairbanks, a lot of people have combo units. They use their boiler to produce their hot water, so it's both seeing a lot of generators. Natural gas fired backup generators is becoming popular, especially as we've had some of these weather issues we've had that result in extended power outages. The natural gas is still available during those power outages, and so they can fire a backup generator, make sure the house stays warm. Supply constraints or supply logistics these days is a huge challenge. Just in this meeting, I was glancing at an email where my operating staff was recommending ordering another one of our critical components for 2023 already. It seems like daily our suppliers are contacting us saying, a meter supply now is 8 to 12 months, 16 months to get a new. If you order a meter today, it's going to take you at least a year before your order is fulfilled. So we've been working hard to make sure we have in inventory everything we need to start our construction season in June and we don't run out. But it's been a major challenge that we have to address daily.
And the other question I have is that because of, it affected me, the facility that built up there knew that gas, there was a little hiccup with gas pressure. Is that what happened this winter?
We did have an interruption for the first time in our history this year in November. Out of our new storage facility, we had a failure of a component that resulted in cold gas going into our distribution pipe, which created a fracture.
that resulted in us needing alternate. We have a backup storage facility that feeds into the system, but it took us some time to get it isolated and to eliminate the leak point to where we could build pressure back up. So it resulted in a loss of pressure, which affected some of our customers, not everyone. Your facility is kind of on the outskirts of one of the piping networks, so the further away from the core it was, the lower pressure would be during that time. It's about a 16-hour impact. We have completed our failure analysis, cause and effect, and are implementing several different things, some procedural changes, some additional fail-safes on the controls and the components. So we had in our design, if gas reaches a certain temperature, it should shut off a valve that stops the flow that allows us to address it. It failed to shut off. The valve didn't close. So the valve didn't close. It was supposed to close. And then that resulted in the cold gas.
Was so the new construction of the facility with the storage tank?
Yeah. It was the new construction of the facility. And so the valve failed to close. So we're implementing, one of the things we're implementing is a couple of additional fail safes. One is, so we monitor the temperature in multiple locations. You probably are going to get more information you ever wanted about a natural gas storage facility. Now we're going to have an additional, if the temperature reaches a certain point, zero minus 10 degrees at our, at the outlet of the storage facility, it will shut our pumps off. Additionally, so if a valve fails, the pumps will have shut off, so that there can't be any flow. So rather than a single potential point of failure, we'll have two additional. So hopefully that will never happen again.
What's the volume of the tank?
About 2 million gallons right now. We started the winter with about 3 million. So through the winter, we'll draw down an inventory, and then in the summer, we'll rebuild that. But so about today, there's about 2 million gallons in.
And so what do you project before next winter?
We're going to need to take it up to about 4 million before next winter. Yeah.
How many trucks a day are you running up the
tables? About 4 to 6 trucks per day. We'll do round trips.
You got Wilkins tanker pups on them yet?
We have not got tanker pups, but the former ADA board member Wilkin and our current IGU board member Wilkin is a key, and it would like to see us increase our hauling capacity by adding an additional trailer. We have we did bring a few loads of LNG from Canada that they have some B train style trailers. They don't quite, they're B trains, but they don't meet Alaska bridge laws, so they have to be split once they hit the border. So we're looking at when we might time adding some to our fleet. We haven't got any yet.
Case is your backup to do the demonstration project, or are you going to continue to do that?
So we have a contract with a company in Canada called Crow Peak. It's an as needed, as wanted kind of contract. It lays the framework, but then we would agree on a per order price and quantity. We do that to have some backup availability if needed. So we did it with Cloud Peak, just make sure, you know, we understand the logistics, how long it takes to get from their facility. So if we have to rely on it, we know what we're relying on. And then we've done one just actually last week with another entity out of Canada, and that one was just a single
one. Under emergency order from DOT on bridge laws?
Probably. I have not asked. This wasn't an emergency when we did the but that's a good suggestion for us to have that conversation with them in advance and say, you know, if we have an emergency, if we have an issue, you know, you kind of lay the groundwork ahead of schedule. Yeah, who do we call? Who? Yeah, because they're not that far out of the...
I'd say to go see John, but go see Ryan now.
Yeah.
And his buddy favor.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And then lastly, my question is what's your plan for the Titan manufacturing facility?
So the Titan facility, we just before the pandemic hit, we were bringing a final investment decision to the IDU board. I asked them to pause that decision because of the reduction in oil price at that time and unknowns related to the impacts of the pandemic to our economy. We're at a point now where we have to relook at bringing that back forward for a final investment decision for to begin construction probably sometime in the next year or two, for sure, especially as we continue to meet some of our new customer addition targets. The need for additional liquefaction is not far behind. The large storage project we built in 2019, the 5.25 million gallon one, gives us a bit of buffer, you know, by using that inventory during the winter and refilling it during the summer when we have excess capacity. But it's going to be needed soon.
Okay. Well, that's all my questions. It was a few, but...
I did have one thing. I made a note on my front page. I wanted to just give you guys a little heads up on one of the components of the interior energy plan and the funding from the state originally was the bonding authorization. In that, there was a sunset date. Originally, it was 2018. That was increased. The legislature kind of does it on a five-year look. So it sunsets in June 30th of 2023, the authorization. So we'll be looking at possibly getting legislation done this year to increase that by another 5 years, as we still have need for availability of that bonding.
Sure.
So we may need to aid support of that legislation.
Mr. Chair, as a reminder on the facilities that were authorized by the legislature for IGU, under Senate Bill 23, there was upwards of $275 million that was authorized for the creation of the Interior Gas Utility. ADA has advanced $139 million at this point under the SETS fund, and we authorized, I believe it goes over 18 months now, and ago up towards a $78 million in bond authorization, which IGU took directly, obtained an investment grade rating itself on, but only issued, and that was the reference of the $10 million
yeah.
for current capital expenditures, but the $78 million that was identified were for continued expansion of the Titan Energy facility.
Yeah, we reduced it to 10 because of the pause on the Titan liquefaction.
Yeah.
The 78 was to include the Titan facility plus the needs for the distribution expansion. So we'll be coming back to you for a renewed authorization of bonding as we contemplate the Titan expansion and additional funds needed for our continued new services and needs as we move forward.
Yeah.
Me too. I'll bring extra.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I could just identify the fact also for the public that we have attached our quarterly report to the legislature on the IEP, which includes a fair amount of this information. The presentation by Dan on IGU is really following the request from the board for the most recent update, but Dan and his staff are directly involved in our ability to complete these reports on a quarterly basis for the legislature, just to provide those ongoing updates.
All right.
Dan, again, congratulations on your being a performer and fingers crossed for 600 connections in 2022, provided you have the materials to do it with.
We have the materials, so we're feeling like we got ahead of it far enough. But
are you using a market technique that says, oh, by the way, Fairbanks, we're 31% cheaper than oil right now? And we can project for the next whatever your gas contract is, what it is, so you won't get the what you use.
Yes, we brought on a new marketing manager last year. He's been doing a great job. As one of those awards we won was for some of the marketing efforts she does. We're really increasing the amount of Facebook activity we have. That's talking about all the reasons why price stability is a big price. Benefits of natural gas and everything else. So, with the volatility that's going on in oil and the security that we have, for the next 10 years, our price would be, very affected very minimally by the cost of gas. And so it gives us the ability to try and control expenses and keep pricing as stable and low as possible.
Well, if we're going to give our best to the board and keep working hard, tell the big guy, even though he's on a fixed income, he does not work hard enough.
Yeah, we have a strong board right now, too. We have two new board members that started in November, familiar names. Jack Wilbur was a previous board member for IGU and
a strong supporter in the Fairbanks community, and Bob Shostak has joined, again, the IGU board, and Bob was very heavily involved in the interior project with ADA.
Yeah.
And so those are very, in the formation of IGU, so they have a strong background and understanding of the project, and so they're great assets for us. So we have an excellent board of directors, and
So Bob, we're all confident until we heard he was on the board, and
turn around. I have some explaining to do now. Yeah. No, his knowledge is well in addition. Yeah.
Again, congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you for presentation and spending the day with my
folks. You bet. I appreciate it. Look forward to coming back in another year.
That's right. I'll see you this summer.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. That brings us to item number C. Executive session, confidential board matters, personal matters, personnel matters, policy matters, Eielson Air Force Base Military Facility Zone Land Development, Ambler Access Project, and Mustang Holdings, LLC. I'll take a motion.
I move that the board enter an executive session to discuss confidential and deliberative matters related to personnel matters, policy matters, Eielson Air Force Base Military Zone Housing Land Development, Ambler Access Project from Mustang Holdings, LLC.
Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Albert. I'll second.
Thank you, Albert. Any objection? Hearing none, we are now in executive session.
Chair, you are on the record.
Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. Bill and Albert, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I can hear you.
So I will make the statement that no matters nothing was decided while we were in executive session on the topics that were identified going into the executive session. So we were going to come out of the executive session, and we're going to go to item number D, resolution G22-02, Eielson Air Force Base Military Facility Zone Land Development. Alan?
Mr. Chair, before the board is resolution number G2202, which is resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority authorizing development activities related to the Eielson Air Force Base Military Facility Zone land development. What we have before the board and attached also a board memorandum is summarizing a proposal that has been made at this point in time for us to undertake development activities for land development that would occur within the military facility zone. And under ADA's statutes for definitions of a project, what we're able to do and allowed to do under our powers and authorities is engage on the development of, quote, infrastructure for an area that is designated as a military facility zone under Alaska Statute 26.30. And under that particular statute, that is up to the Alaska Military and Veterans Affairs Department to determine a military facility zone as requested by a municipality. And in this particular case, the City of North Pole has requested that allocation and through a city ordinance designated the City of North Pole as a military facility zone. So following through that, with the proposal itself, what we're looking to undertake is, in summary, is a structure where ultimately in working with the City of North Pole or, you know, land within a military facility zone in general, that it be acquired, provided to ADA for development, that ADA would undertake doing the master planning for housing development, subdivision, utilities, water connections, electrical connections, gas, everything required on that site, common facilities ultimately for the housing development. And this would be particularly directed to eliminate certain barriers of entry, lower the costs of entry for housing contractors within the Fairbanks North Star Borough area to develop housing that would support off-base housing for Eielson Air Force Base personnel. Now, what we also provide within the memorandum is the background information that the Fairbanks North Star Borough community has been working on over the last several years on the designations of the F-35 personnel by the U.S. military, the Air Force, to Eielson Air Force Base, and the addition of the KC-135
refueling transportation aircraft. So their crews, the pilots for those different squadrons that are involved with F-35s, and the families that are related to it, seeking to ensure that there's housing for them off base. And if they are able to house off base, that benefits the community quite immediately, because their involvement directly into the community, the goods and services that would be additionally supplied to those families by businesses within the Fairbanks North Star Borough, those follow on economic development benefits.
So let me see if I can put it in perspective, Alan. So an airman right now, because there's no housing, comes up without his family. And they're on a one-year rotation, which is, you know, very, very poor for the morale of the family unit and for the Air Force. And there's a concern there, because the Air Force doesn't think there's housing for them. Or maybe there isn't housing for them. So, that being said, one of our missions is to provide long-term jobs for Alaskans. Correct?
Correct.
So, or we'll just call long-term some jobs. So, long-term jobs, typically the family unit comes up. Right now, only one is working in Alaska. By doing this to get the family up, many times the spouse, whether it's a woman or a man, who isn't up here, will come up and work, find a job. So the way I look at this, my personal way of looking at this, whether it's a mining job or a military job, this is a two-for-one job. The military is bringing one up, and we're providing an opportunity for another job, full-time job, in the Fairbanks community. Is that a way of looking at it?
That is correct. That is with the personnel themselves and the following economic development opportunities. The fact of the airmen and their families coming up to the community itself is an economic development driver because of the goods and services that the military in general does within the state of Alaska, and we provide that background information as well. So that is added on top of what you've identified.
Okay. All right. Questions on the board before I ask? Put it on the agenda or the table.
Mr. Chairman, just having been in the military up in Fairbanks and experiencing this firsthand, this is something that would greatly help not only the soldiers but also the family members, because they do want to be together and not have to be separate like they're on a deployment. So kudos to us trying to put a solution together.
Thank you, Albert.
Someone make a motion for the resolution?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to motion that we approve resolution number G22-02, Isles on Air Force Base Military Facility Zone Land Development.
Thank you, Bill. Any further discussion? Hearing none, maybe would you call for us?
Mr.
Chairman.
Yes.
He's gone.
Mr. Fogel.
Yes.
Mr. Beasley-Moore.
Yes.
Commissioner Candy.
She's gone.
Chair Cruz.
Here. All right. That brings us up to resolution G22-03, Yamlo Access Project 2022 Field Season Plan and Budget. Alan.
Thank you, Chair. Before the board is resolution number G2203, which is resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority relating to development of the Ambler Access Project to conduct certain final feasibility and permitting activities with respect to the 2022 field season plan and budget. Mr. Chair, board members, we have a board memorandum that is attached with the resolution. Additionally, we have a presentation that has been attached with this, which I would ask if Dave Heimke, ADA's Chief Operating Officer, also joins me at the table, please. And we'll go through that presentation. But prior to starting the presentation, what I would like to do is summarize a little bit of the elements that we've covered within the board memorandum, just so you're aware and able to also ask any particular questions that you may have related to that. What I wanted to highlight is a follow-up to actions that were taken by the board with the 2021 field season. And this relates to defining ADA's procurement procedures for its professional services. And if you recall, back in April of 2021, when we were reviewing the 2021 field season, the board approved a professional services procedures, procurement procedures, which we then adopted. And the principles that were underlying that was to ensure that we had the broadest engagement with Alaska businesses and contractors for their opportunities within the opportunities that we were presenting for contractual work on the Anbar Access Road for these feasibility and final permitting activities. What I'm looking to identify with everyone is that through this, ADA has engaged with a total of 42 Alaska prime and subservice providers under its contracting for the Anbar Access Project in the 12 definitive tasks that we identified for procurement last year and will be ongoing with in the current field season. Of this, there are 34 distinct companies. So in some cases, we're working with subcontractors that are also acting as a prime contractor or another subcontractor under a different task. But in any case, we're dealing with 34 distinct service providers at this stage through 2024, which is what we currently have identified as the end of these permitting activities, and being able to present at that point in time a final investment decision for the board. Within that procurement procedures, we also identified ways of engaging and enhancing minority business enterprise opportunities, and we provide information and reporting on that as follow-up. And really what we identified is with the contracting for Anbar Access, we want to ensure that there were broader opportunities for what were defined as minority business enterprises, which are, in this case, includes Native-owned businesses, other disadvantaged business owners by other federal definitions. So this was ultimately included in this, and we have engaged broadly with certain mandates under these tasks, and we define out the goals that were identified as well as what was achieved in the contracting. In many cases, we're exceeding the goal, which is already elevated from any other approach that's been undertaken within the state on NDEs. And we believe it's really provided a very good example of what can be achieved with the contracting firms that are really active, engaged, experienced within the state of Alaska for these types of access projects, projects ADA undertakes. In a couple of cases, we're not at the level of achievement, and we're monitoring that as they're going forward. We have provided the reasoning behind why those haven't been achieved, but we're ready to address any questions anyone has on that. But ultimately, this has been a significant achievement in the way that the board has directed the procurement procedures for Ambler at this point. The other side that I want to identify with the field season and the budget proposal is the stakeholder engagement aspects that have been addressed. And we heard a little bit on the public comment this morning about, or this afternoon, at noontime, when we started the meeting, I had public comment about the Subsistence Advisory Committee. This has been one of the major steps that the project, again, the Anbar Access Project, has undertaken in fulfilling its obligations for its permitting, for the record of decision, its engagement with the Bureau of Land Management. But it's an important issue for us within the state. We know how important and critical an issue subsistence is. What ADA did in its role was sponsor a subsistence advisory working group, which was engaged in May, June of 2021, this past year, and really identifying key leaders within the village communities that are impacted broadly by the Anbar Access Project, to have them share a working group that started to identify the policies and procedures that would be established ultimately for the Subsistence Advisory Committee. It's through their engagement, through their involvement, all being elders within the different village communities engaged in subsistence, that they recommended a policy and procedures of actually identifying and having applications available in the villages and the communities impacted to be appointed ultimately to the Subsistence Advisory Committee. It is their committee. It is to support the Anbar Access Project. It is sponsored by ADA. again, in ensuring that there is access and availability for these village and elder representatives to meet, to be able to engage on this. And the follow-ups, ultimately, with that committee is being determined by the co-chairs and the members of that committee directly. So we believe that and see it as a very significant benefit that has been incorporated over this past year in the stakeholder engagement, particularly in subsistence, with very broad input coming from the village communities, the elders that are directly involved in subsistence. We ourselves are respecting that process of the way that the co-chairs and the members themselves have determined how that subsistence advisory committee can best give input ultimately to the designs and other issues we're facing as we're finalizing this feasibility to present a final investment decision ultimately to the board. The other element that came from it in the conversations that I want to highlight is the direct input from these village elders about the economic impact to their communities, the economic opportunity that the road itself represented. And this has then been the follow-up through with the jobs and workforce development focus as well by this committee. So this is an additional component that we have broadly adopted within that and then have subsequently had groups that have engaged in Hughes, scheduled to be in Alana, Alakakit, to present the workforce development opportunities that the road itself presents for work and engagement on the mining activity that we believe will result once the access road is available and for the road itself. So there's significant follow-on benefits that are coming from the engagement with the Subsistence Advisory Committee. So I did want to highlight those particular points. We do identify that within the memorandum. We identify the involvement of the different communities that are on that committee, which I think is a very key strength in the formation of it. And at this point, I really do ask Dave if there's anything you want to add on to these particular points or ultimately work in with the presentation.
I'd add for the workforce development was an item brought up in the Subsistence Advisory Committee working group. And as Alan mentioned, that was a spinoff, so now we have a workforce development working group. Job fairs have already started. We've identified over 40 jobs to have in those job fairs, actually closer to 50. And in that, we're looking at job progression. So there's entry-level jobs, there's intern jobs. It crosses a wide variety of our field work. And then the idea is that it would progress onward. The project continues after the final investment decision. So it's a long view of jobs and career development opportunities for the folks along the access road.
If I may add, and just really reading from our memorandum where we provide the information, is just really identify the communities that is involved in this and how impactful it is. The Subsistence Advisory Committee itself is chaired by Fred Biefeld and Larry Westlake. We have elder representatives from the native villages of Alakakit, Huslia, Alana, Hughes, Kobuk, Shugnak, Nordic, Kiana, Ambler, and Evansville. So it's a broad representation along the route, and again, elders directly from those village communities.
Alan, how do you, one of the things we keep hearing is there's a few, I'll call them lodge businesses out there that keep saying it's going to affect their, the program is going to affect their business, but in reality their business is using thousands and thousands and thousands of acres of public land to their benefit at no cost. So how do we address that?
What we've been trying to identify consistently when that point has been raised by individual operators and their particular business is that the road itself is not the depiction of the road and its development and its access is not accurate. That it's for industrial use, it's on a specific route, and ultimately it's not going to engage with public access, which would ultimately interfere with that. The route itself doesn't impact the particular areas that they've been identifying. The parties have also been behind different documentaries have been addressed about the broader impacts of the road, which are not factually correct in several circumstances about the use of the road, the way it's being developed. So we're trying to address that by information-wise on, you know, issues like this, how we've engaged on the Citizens Advisory Committee, ways that we've incorporated those communities.
Is there any differential between the benefit of a few versus the benefit of the many of a public asset?
That is part of the information that we've been identifying in each case is why is it that AIDA is engaging on this Ambler Access Road? What is ultimately the benefit? What is the objective for this? The same issues that were identified in Anilka back in 1980, which is access to a mining district and its economic development benefits for the state of Alaska. So we've consistently identified what we've shared with the board. All the residents through, you know, there's mining royalties that come from the development within the district itself, and 25% of that goes to the permanent fund. The economic development benefits through employment, what we've seen in the development of the Red Dog mine, and how that's impacted and benefited social services to our indigenous and rural communities. Those benefits are present once we're able to get access and gain development of those mining interests within the mining district itself.
And potential future other opportunities that we don't know because there is no access.
As Chair, as you've identified, there is a logistics chain that needs to be identified as well with the development of the mining district. The road is one aspect of it. There are logistics businesses that are going to get engaged through the entire chain, ultimately to a port within Alaska that benefit from this as well.
We may need to ask law this directly, but I think there's also a provision for all of the mining proceeds to be shared amongst different tribal organizations when they're mined. That may not be the case, but
Under ANCSA, what currently is engaged, and I would highlight with the benefits that we've seen broadly within the state of Alaska with Red Dog, is that they're under ANCSA with 7I, 7J, there's a shared amount of payments. Now, that relates to very specific areas of lease. That does include some elements of lease within Ambler Mining District, but it doesn't cover all of the leasing. There's federal leases that are included as well.
Any more?
Presentation.
All right.
All right. Well, I'll address your attention to the presentation. We'll go through this. I'm on the second slide, 2021 project and field work highlights. So this really brings you up to speed on the start. I believe you all know when we had the record of decision, we were able to get our contracting procurement underway. That launched a field season that was delayed. But what I think you'll see through these task orders and what we're talking about is a pretty significant amount of work that we're leapfrogging off this year. I bring your attention to the lower right corner as well, over 4,800 hours of safe field work. Our safety protocols from all of our contractors and this coming year synthesized from an AIDA safety, we'll have our own AIDA safety person in charge. So that's the next slide. Highlights by the numbers. I think this slide lets you know that the abbreviated field season did result in quite efficient work, lots of survey activity, fish habitat studies that will feed into the Subsistence Advisory Committee. We kicked off a tribal liaison program, lots of cultural resource work, of course, in the initial season and certainly this coming season, stream monitors, hydraulics, hydrology, bridge crossings. The next slide really gives a highlight of that tribal liaison program. Our annual field work report was uploaded on December 23rd, so the consulting parties are reviewing that currently, and that goes over all of the field work, which I would encourage folks to be aware that is highly exhaustive and excellent quality work done by our contractors on cultural resources. The Tribal Liaison Program was established, and this year is growing as the project evolves. So we've reached out to all of the villages with a letter here recently, hoping to engage them in expansion of that program. As we go forward, it will also be part of the job fairs that are that we spoke to that are coming up shortly and have already started. Cultural resource survey highlights, won't go into the details, but what this gives you is an idea that we're starting to be very comprehensive in our approach, even in our initial field season. I would highlight that 691 acres are surveyed with quite a few test areas and shovel test pits. That's a big part of the 22 field season as well. Stakeholder outreach, ramping up still and continuing. The job fairs are, I keep alluding to those, they're a very important part of our communications folks as we look at the real impacts of the road on the communities as we go forward for economic development. We're working on our newsletter, our public engagement, various different types of engagement, including mail, including visits to the villages, website updates, and so you'll see a continuing improvement and establishment of stakeholder outreach, which is why you've seen that uptick in that budget request.
Good review.
Excuse me?
Off the record.
Carrie, you are live.
Thank you. David?
All right, the rest of the slideshow is just to focus on our schedule for this year, 22. We're already well underway in our planning. Upcoming activities are a repeat of last year with amplification of sites due to our extended season. And the last slide here is current priorities and next steps, which, as you see, drive us to our 2024 as we hone in on our 2024 final investment decision.
All right. So, Mr. Chair, we provided all the information for your review, and ultimately what we're asking for is allocation of $15.4 million in budget for 2022 to match a similar allocation by Amber Metals for this field season, 2022.
All right. Can I get resolution G22-03 on the floor, please?
Mr. Chair. I would move we approve resolution number G22-03 and the access project 2022 field season final budget.
This is Albert. I'll second.
Any opposed? Okay, call the vote.
Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Kinzig? Mr. Fogle?
Yes.
Mr. Vivlamore?
Yes.
Mr. Sandy? Chair Bruce.
Yes.
Thank you.
I hear you off the call. Okay, resolution 22-04, Mustang Holdings, LLC, capital budget. Alan, quickly.
Mr. Chair, before you, it's resolution G22-04, resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority approving a first half of 2022, January through June 2022 budget and project plan in support of the Mustang Oil Field Development Project. What we are requesting board and provided the supporting information on is a budget allocating $1.28 million for specific expenses that we're to undertake in managing the ongoing Mustang Oil Project.
Thank you. Questions? I'll take a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move resolution number G22-04, Mustang Holding LLC, CY 2022 capital budget.
For a second?
Second.
Thank you. The polls are putting us for a vote. Hearing none. Sammy, would you poll the board?
McKinnon?
Yes.
Chair Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Fogle?
Yes.
Mr. Vivlamore?
Yes.
Passes. Thank you.
bring this up to resolution G22-05, this is policy update.
Mr. Chairman?
Anna?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Board Member McKinnon. Mr. Chairman, I move to defer resolution G22-05 investment policy update with a request that we seek the Attorney General's opinion on the resolution.
Alan?
Mr. Chair, what we have presented was language that was following the December 1st board meeting discussion on a proposal really for the board to consider as far as what it would look like for the policy to be amended. We will follow up and make a request to the Attorney General to have a look into this matter and provide us a full opinion.
Great. Thank you. Is there any objection for postponing action on G22-05? Hearing none, they're postponed until AG's opinion. Thank you. Brings us to number 7, Director's comments.
Mr. Chair, what the first part of our director's comments is related to the ADA Fiscal 2021 Annual Report, and that was what our person that had kind of given public comment in person had identified and held up. So we want to make sure that everyone had access to our most recently completed annual report. This is in follow-up to our compliance with statutes 4488-205, in which case we have provided an annual letter to the legislature defining our excess assets, as well as providing a report and follow-on report on our financial statements. This is also covered under Alaska statutes 4488-210. This was required to be provided to the legislature on January 10th, as we had provided at that point in time, and also provided copies of that to the board. We're making the annual report available through the director's comments with this board meeting, so people have a chance to review that same information.
Okay.
I do want to, in this case, compliment our communications director and her staff, Colleen Bryan, for the work that she did in pulling this information together. This annual report was done in-house. It's providing, you know, the governor's letters, providing the full stats of what loans that we've initiated during the year, the jobs that have been created from that, the key performance indicators that we have identified and we report on an annual basis to the legislature. So that's been incorporated into here, as well as giving some definition on some of the, you know, specific projects that we've undertaken over the year. So overall, I really do want to congratulate Colleen Bryan and her group for pulling this together for us.
Great. Thank you.
With 7D, this is the updated organizational chart. And for ADA, what I would like to identify, there's been two fundamental changes I wanted to advise the board about. Mark Davis, who has previously been in the role of Chief Infrastructure Development Officer, has now moved to a position of special counsel. And so he's focused on ADA as well as principally some federal issues that are impacting the state and economic development in support of being of the broader state. So he's a great resource on that side. But we're looking at him as, and now in the particular role of special counsel. Dave Heinke has undertaken the position overall in our operations, which had incorporated that group, which is on infrastructure development, and is looking at adding people to support that function. So that will continue within the organization. Mark is identified now as special counsel. The other change that I want to identify is that the loan participation program and our commercial finance director previously was an independent group. And what we're looking at is how we're organizing and following on the servicing, internal management, and external management of our loan programs. So we've concentrated that group as well under our Chief Investment Officer. So at this point, Tiffany now is reporting to Morgan Neff as our Chief Investment Officer. And I think there's very consistent reporting, very good work being undertaken by both of them under that focus for the organization. So those are the principal changes that are within here. The other one I need to identify is the fact that Rainey is now on board with us full-time as the Executive Assistant in support for the board.
How are you doing filling some of those positions?
We've actually done, we've had quite a few new people that have joined the ADA staff over the last few months. We're really filling in the particular areas. I would say overall, the way that the management focus for your organization is really one intent for growth. I think we're very much prepared at this point in time to expand and grow our mission within the state of Alaska. We have the loan participation, loan dashboard, and loan participation report. So at this point in time, I know that the board members, you had a chance to review it. We're able to address any questions that you may have. There is, and I do want to update that there's an ongoing review in place with the Budget and Audit Subcommittee on risk management concentrations that exist within the loan portfolio. So we're going through our systems and how we can report and aggregate that data. So also follow up on that with the Budget and Audit Subcommittee. I do believe that that will result at some point in time in a presentation to the board as a whole. And then with item, unless there's any other questions, then with item 7D, this is the Interior Energy Project Report, which was referenced in the IGU's presentation. We provide this on a quarterly basis to the legislature, and it's therefore yours in the public's review.
Next meeting is Wednesday, March 2nd. Board comments. Anna? Bill?
No additional comments, sir. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank
Ben.
Oh, are you still here, Albert?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to Alan for putting together a lot of information at the Budget and Audit Subcommittee that we had on January 18th. Went over some of the underwriting process and the approvals, and all the answers were satisfactorily answered, and we got to understand how the approval process actually processed and looked at the loan dashboard. And I have to report that a lot of our loan modifications are coming to an end in 2022. So we have, I think, successfully navigated what we thought might be a huge downturn for ADA. But we have helped out a lot of businesses throughout the COVID time period, and we should be proud of that. And I just want to say thank you to Alan for helping navigate us as a board and the committee, and having your staff put together all that work for us. So thank you.
I too would like to thank Alan and the team, David, Amy, and it was our new attorney, sorry, Jeff. Yeah, that figures, I would too. Anyway, appreciate David's help. I'm wondering, as a comment, I don't expect an answer, would it be beneficial to have a white paper, we'll call it, on what ADA has actually done to benefit Alaska businesses through the COVID pandemic, and disseminate that amongst certain people in general? Anna, what are your thoughts on that? Not necessarily the office, but I'm going to give details, but the programs, the timing, and maybe, you know, number of dollars that were helped, we deferred, and number of businesses, or number of employees, or number of whatever, just something that kind of says, hey, just so you know, your team, the legislature, your team, which is us, Alan and Drew, this is what we accomplished, just FYI for you. Would that hurt or help?
It depends on the timing of when it's received, right? Because they get so so busy at the end of session, and they're, I believe, shooting to get out in 90 days, as they always do. But yes, I think an accounting at a high level of what the Alaska Cares program did, and the number of businesses that were affected, and breaking those out into some categories, whether it's geographically or whether it's by industry or minority ownership. I know that there's a lot of interest in regional assistance, assistance, and I know that they would be grateful to hear where dollars were deployed in tourism, since that has just lasted for, you know, an incredible amount of time for that particular industry group. Yeah, I think some facts.
Fact sheet on it.
Yeah.
Sure. Bill and Albert, you guys are right with that?
Sure. Yep, makes sense. Those are things, there's a lot of loan modifications that have a lot of small businesses as well.
It also reminded me to tell you that the Budget and Audit Subcommittee is only going to meet once a month, since we have now sort of wrapped up all the COVID emergencies.
So, Albert, how come all the staff is jumping up clapping?
Less work. It just goes to show you the amount of work that has put together to save a lot of these businesses from going out of business over the past 2 years.
Yeah.
So we should have a report that shows how much we have done for Alaska businesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Board Member McKinnon, we might want to reach out to some of the early askers and see if they'd be willing to submit one or two sentences about how our work and what ADA did benefited them. I think about the blood bank in an early conversation and how dire.
They sent something out. They sent a letter out.
Right, but we could take that in a paragraph and provide it so that the legislature had a synopsis in what we provided. And there are others that have been before us, either for a loan modification or something significant. From different geographic regions, too. Again, the legislature is elected by constituencies located in geographic areas, so what we do in that regard is very interesting to them, I think.
Okay. Good idea.
So we will, as staff, we'll follow up on that and compile that information. And in case of Board Member McKinnon, what you highlighted on the comments right early on, we have generated some of those, and would be happy to share those with everyone.
Something also, you can also, you know, not the whole thing with you, but next annual report, use a little bit of it.
But what I would highlight within the annual report, 2021 report itself, we do identify the comments that we did, you know, receive from the blood bank. Really thank them, the board, for the work that was being done.
Specific, so.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that's my comment, so thank you very much, and thanks, Stephen, for hanging out there with us. Is this your last meeting with us? No? Oh, man. Yeah, so much for that idea. if there's no further comments, I'll take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Board Member McKinnon, I'll second.
Any objection? Bill and Albert, have a great rest of the week, and